Hour 2 of Wildcat Insider, John Kurtz, Wyatt Thompson, Mitch Fortner, all here with you. We are going to talk some spring football here in the opening segment. Gene Taylor is going to join us at 5:20. We'll talk about a lot of things with him, where things are at with expectations for men's basketball next year. Gene Taylor gets a new contract extension. We'll ask him about all of that as well. You can tweet us at TheGameKMAN, tweet me at JL Kurtz, tweet Mitch at MitchTheFort. I should ask this before we get back into spring football. I know that the transfer market is crazy right now in college basketball. I saw today, or as of earlier today, there were 962 names in it, according to... Now, this was just some guy on Twitter who's keeping an updated graph of it, which was insane, like an Excel chart with all these names. Made my head spin trying to look at that thing. But there are a ton of players out there. K-State, I think, is very, very actively recruiting. There are plenty of names that I've heard thrown out there. I mean, the Brandon McKissick kid from Kansas City, formerly known as UMKC, is one of those that's been mentioned. Like Mark Smith, who's been at Illinois and Missouri, is another name that I've heard mentioned. The Little Rock kid is Marquise Noel. I apologize if I have botched his name, but Marquise Noel.
I think it's Noel.
Okay, Marquise Noel from Little Rock. He averaged 16 points, 5 assists per game during his career in 3 years at Little Rock. Like, those are some names I would keep your eye on as of right now. Haven't seen anything official there, but I mean, K-State certainly is doing everything they can right now to try and fill those spots, which they're going to have to now, having lost three players to the portal.
Being very active, I think, is quite accurate at this point, but who isn't? You know, and I do think that we are at 1,000-ish, maybe a little bit over now in the portal from what I understand. But, hey, 960, 1,100, I mean, you get the point. It's flooded. There's a lot to, you know, comb through, sift through, whatever. And a lot of these athletes, I think, are going to have lots of choices. Okay? I wonder aloud if all will have choices when it's all said and done, because there is so much in numbers in the portal, but we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, K-State, I think, is active. You mentioned three names there. I'm sure there are, you know, several others, but I think we've all heard those names for sure, and we'll see how that plays out here in the next few days. But they're very busy, no question.
Yeah, Noel's an interesting case. I mean, he did have a season where he's first team all Sun Belt. He shot 39% from 3-point range on 197 attempts. I love all of that. He's really small, and he left halfway through this past season with what was deemed an opt-out, but his coach pretty much just roasted him on the way out the door. His head coach was Darryl Walker, and he said Marquise didn't want to be a part of this team, so at the end of the day, he opted out. That's the best thing for him. It's the best thing for us. We're definitely happy to be moving on. So there was a rocky end there. Now, sometimes that can turn into a he said, she said.
Sure.
And again, he had one season where he was absolutely phenomenal. Personally, I think that's the kind of kid that you probably have to take that sort of a chance on based on what your roster is headed into next year. But we'll keep you up to date here throughout the week if there is anything, obviously, that becomes official on the transfer front for K-State. Now, spring football, I know we've discussed a lot of names on the defensive side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball, at running back, I do think there is reason to be very optimistic beyond just Deuce Vaughn, who you know, we all think is a budding star and going to be one of the best players in the league. But Joe Irvin has me very intrigued with him coming back, and it sounds like he's making his way. There was a conditioning learning curve, I think, to jump back into it after he sat out this past year, opted out this past year. But even like Keon Mosey is a name that really intrigues me. Jacardier Wright, it sounds like, is starting to get back on the pardon the pun right track with what he's been able to do this spring. So how much reason for optimism should there be about that?
I think there should be lots of optimism with those guys that you just mentioned, for sure. I think we saw Deuce explode onto the college football scene a year ago. He's stronger, has a better feel of what he's doing and, you know, what K-State is doing offensively now. I think there's some comfortability and confidence there with him on that. Probably the same, too, for Keon. I have this conversation with Ryan Lackey all the time, and I think he was the first to say it, but I think more fans would be talking about number 6 if it weren't for number 22, and I think that's probably accurate. So I'll give Lack a tip of the cap there. You know, then the other guys you mentioned, I'm really excited. I'm not going to lie about this. I'm really excited to have Joe Irvin back, because I thought in his freshman season – he really did a nice job. He was able to run inside and out. He was able to catch the ball. He was pretty good in virtually all settings. Then he opted out a year ago, came back, and I think now he is, as you say, getting back into the routine and the shape and all of those kind of things that it takes to play major college football. He's a good player. And then I'm also very pumped up about Jacardier Wright, because I think Jacardier has really made a lot of strides since the end of last season. You know, we talked all last year, you know, K-State needed another back with some size and those types of things, and he certainly has that. But he's another guy that I think has worked a lot on nutrition and his body and working out and just getting better and playing harder and practicing harder daily, and it's benefited him, no doubt. I don't know. I don't want to say what I think he could potentially do in terms of, you know, playing time, because, you know, there are only so – you got four pretty darn good guys there, and there are only so many snaps. But I think he has put himself into the conversation, and that is a good thing.
They're at least in a spot where I think they have four really legitimate athletes.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you know me, that's the side that I typically lean toward, is if we're going like athletes or just guys that are going to be in the right place and know what they're doing, I'm always going to lean toward just give me the athlete. And I do feel that's a position where I do not doubt that they have athletes there. I mean, I wonder about some other spots like linebacker, for instance, if that's not skewed too much the other way. But running back is one of those spots where I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, I think, again, those four guys, you just have to appreciate, you know, kind of what they bring to the table athletically. Deuce is a very unique talent. I think we've all seen that. His ability to move side to side and to make people miss, and he's stronger than he looks. His ability to catch the ball is very, very good. I think you'll see K-State move him all over the field. I think you'll see that also with Keon Mosey to a degree. And I've said this before, Joe can catch the ball. There's no doubt. You know, I don't know how much they'll throw to Jacardier, but I've seen him run this spring, and I really think he has improved a bunch in virtually every way. I really think he's put himself into a really good spin here.
I don't think I've talked much about the offensive line, which makes sense, right? Everybody wants to talk quarterbacks, and then if not that, it's wide receivers, particularly on this show, where
yeah.
I really worry and wonder about the receivers. The offensive line, though, general consensus seems to be that it's really coming along, like that things are in very, very good shape right now.
Well, all of the things that we've been talking about today about, you know, guys transforming bodies to a degree and or being bigger and stronger, ditto here, I think, just straight across. And what I'm most excited about there is the depth a year later. It's been pretty well described that, you know, you go back to last spring, you're replacing an entire starting offensive group, and now here you are a year later through some bumps and bruises and some ups and downs and all of that. You know, I think Connor Riley does a terrific job. One, those kids have really worked hard too, and now you're starting to see some shape take place. I think the coaches are really excited. We got a big, big break when Noah Johnson decided to come back. Josh Revis is better. Cooper Beebe. You know, I mean, I shouldn't start naming everybody, because I think there are a lot of guys in the mix there. And that's the thing. You're still seeing, or at least I believe I'm seeing, guys that are continuing to get bigger and stronger that are in the mix now, but will definitely be in the mix as we move forward. I think of a guy like Carver Willis, Taylor Warner, some of those kind of guys. I mean, Taylor Potier has not done a lot this spring because he's been injured, but he'll be a factor in the fall. So there's a lot of quality there and a lot more depth than what we've seen in a while.
Yeah, like, is Taylor Warner at the point where he could challenge for playing time already this early in his career? Is that still
– wouldn't surprise me at all.
Too far off.
And I'm probably missing some guys. I'm going to sit here and look, and I mean, Warner –
like Whit Mitchum is another name that I've heard a lot of good things about.
Whit Mitchum is another – he's another guy that I think is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. He has made great strides in the last few months. What will he look like a year from now even? I think that's what you have to project out, because he has such a great frame. He's strong and has – he's got the ability to put on a lot more weight and still be able to run and be, you know, a really good athlete at what he's doing. and we haven't even mentioned like Christian Duffy and KT and some of the Katori Leviston, some of those kind of guys who also have gotten better, and they're in starting roles for the most part, you know. So yeah, that's one area where I think if you're talking about depth, the offensive line and the strides that they've made in the last 2 years is really, really big time.
Yeah, Christian Duffy has received a lot of praise and has received multiple of those weekly awards so far this spring. So, yeah, that is a name should be bringing up.
We didn't mention Ben Adler. Ben Adler, with Taylor being out, Portier being out, has done a really good job at the guard spot. And there are young guys in there, too. And I know we need to get to a break, but there are guys – Sam Shields has really worked hard. Hadley Panzer's new to the program. He's really done a good job. I mean, we can just go down the – I think we mentioned Whit Mitchum. Logan Long doesn't get any credit. He's really – I mean, who knows how much he'll play, but he's really transitioned from tight end to tackle and has done a really good job. Tough football player.
There's a lot to talk to Gene Taylor about. He is scheduled to join us coming up next, the athletic director here at K-State. What are the expectations for men's basketball next year? Has that conversation occurred with Bruce Weber? And we'll ask Gene about the naysayers about his new contract that he just got here within the last week as well, coming up on Wildcat Insider. We are back here on Wildcat Insider. John Kurtz, Wyatt Thompson, Mitch Fortner all with you, and joined now by Gene Taylor, the athletic director here at K-State. Appreciate the time as always, Gene. First and foremost, congratulations on the new contract that's been signed and made official here within the last week. How does it feel to get that wrapped up right now?
Thank you very much. It feels good. Obviously, you know, had a year left, and with President Myers working with me, it was, you know, just a good feeling to be able to be committed to just be able to stay here for, you know, six more years, and really looking forward to it.
How long does something like that wind up being in the works? How long of a process is it to get something in that realm ironed out?
Oh, you know, it really kind of started, you know, just a little bit before COVID hit. And then, like everything else, we took a break. And, you know, after the first of the year, kind of agreed to let's get back and start working things out. It was, you know, fairly simple process in terms of, you know, just going back and forth about various issues. But it was not really hard at all. It was just more about, you know, he's busy and I'm busy, and you just kind of throw it out there, and then they work on it for a while and get it back to you, and then you look at it and work on it for a while and get it back to them. So it really wasn't very painful at all. Just and we weren't in a big hurry either. Obviously, they still had another year, and President Myers was going to be here, so we just wanted to work through it and take our time and get it done right.
Yeah, and on that front, I know that I think there are two sides of this, and I've seen, you know, both sides argued. I mean, what I would argue is, hey, you were making, at least according to the list that I'm seeing here from USA Today, about $200,000, $220,000 less than the next highest in the Big 12. So, hey, if you're signing a contract extension, it's just about paying a competitive salary there. But I've also seen people with the, hey, it's a 32% raise in base pay for next year in a pandemic, people at the university being furloughed and let go, and is that the greatest look, and is the timing the greatest here? How would you respond to some of the criticism that's come as far as that's concerned?
Well, I understand that. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, anytime you see that, and honestly, I mean, you know, when we have staff that haven't had a raise in a while, I mean, it's, you know, it is, I can see their point clearly. But I also know, you know, from a financial perspective, kind of where we are as a department, and President Myers was committed to making sure that I was paid competitively. Felt that, you know, in the 4 years that I've been here, felt that we've done a pretty good job in the athletic program, continuing to move forward. And, you know, he wanted to get me up to where I could be competitive within the Big 12 and yet still be reasonable. So, yeah, I mean, any time you have a raise of that significance, then whether it's an AD or a football coach or any kind of coach, people have concerns about it. But, you know, if we weren't able to do it financially as a department, we wouldn't have. And, you know, depending on where we were, I may not start there. It just kind of depends on where the budget is come July 1st.
Gene, congratulations on the contract. I guess I would ask you a couple of questions here. One, thinking about your time here, what's away from the pandemic, what stands out in your time here to this point? And then secondarily, with the pandemic, what's the last 13, 14, 15 months been like? I can't really imagine trying to lead through this, and yet I think everybody understands it has to be done.
You know, I think for me, what I continue to be impressed with is our donors and our fans and the commitment they have to our program. Not only, you know, we see the facilities, whether it's the baseball and the soccer facility we finished, or now the soon-to-be-completed South End Zone project, and before I got here, you know, the veneer projects, the West Stadium Center, the Ice Family Basketball Facility, you know, the Goss Tennis Facility. I mean, those commitments and those donors continue to believe in what we're doing, whether it's me leading it or whoever. That, to me, is just so impressive, and how committed they are to making sure we continue to stay competitive, and they understand the importance of facilities and support, and whether it's, you know, a minor thing or a major issue, they're there for us all the time. And I think in like 4 years, that's been so, you know, fun to see, and so compliment to see that kind of support for our student athletes and our coaches. You know, in terms of the pandemic, you know, the biggest thing is just how proud I am of all of our staff and coaches and athletes and their ability to adjust on the fly. And whether it's, you know, operationally, all of a sudden you're sending people home, and then all of a sudden you start to come back, but yet every week things change, at least initially from the first part of the pandemic back in, you know, March until really August, and then all of a sudden, you know, just operationally, how are we going to manage it operationally, the constant, you know, meetings and discussions. Our medical team have been phenomenal, and all the things and the hours they put into testing and making sure our athletes safe, and then our athletes, you know, being willing to, you know, to hang in there and battle through it and have games canceled and come back. I mean, just really the flexibility and the fortitude of everybody through this has been phenomenal to be a part of, to see it happen.
Gene, I've heard a lot of people say, heck, I've even said it, that the hardest thing, or how athletic directors are judged, is as simple as the coaches that they hire and fire. I'm curious as to what you would say about that. And secondarily, is that selling it short? Because from my perspective, being a little bit on the inside as an athletic department employee, I think you have to be so many things to so many different people. Is that short selling it a little bit when they say things like that?
Well, I think it is, you know, on a daily basis and really just on a yearly basis as to what as we as athletic directors do. But I think the most public thing that people see of ADs, you know, we're not really typically out in front of things, and we're more behind the scenes, or, you know, at least I've always been. That's kind of been my role, being there to support and not really, you know, when I need to be out in front of it, I will be. But if not, I want the athletes and the coaches to, you know, really be the light shining on them. But, you know, we have, you know, in a particular, you know, it's your more high-profile sports, your football, your basketballs, and those kind of sports that take the emphasis on that. And so, yeah, sometimes ADs are measured simply by those hires, and whether that's fair or not. I mean, if you hire a coach that's successful, they think you're a great AD. If you hire a coach that's not, then they feel like you don't know what you're doing. So, but, yeah, you could, you know, good, it's just circumstantial. So, it's probably not accurate. It's from a public perception it is, and that's how they measure you. But there are a lot of things that go on in our world that we deal with, and you know, certainly, but that's very important. I mean, I think you've got to hire staff that fit your institution, that fits your program, and that you have ability to be successful. And there's no question that that's a critically, probably one of the top things ADs need to, you know, we got to measure by.
Gene Taylor is talking with us on Wildcat Insider. I know one thing we've discussed before is that, hey, end of the season, you'll have a sit-down meeting, discuss goals and where the program is headed. Basketball season now over and wrapped up. Have you had a chance to have that conversation with Bruce Weber? And if so, what was the general tone and the message of that?
Yeah, I mean, yes, we have. And the general tone was, you know, very positive. I mean, I'm not going to get into the specifics, but, you know, we reviewed the season and, you know, the positives and the negatives, and, you know, obviously talked a lot about COVID and its impact, and then what, you know, we needed to, what he would do, you know, differently, and what he would continue to do the same, and kind of what the expectations are, you know, going forward. And so all those were very open and there was, you know, nothing that surprised me of things that he had to say, and I don't think there was anything that surprised him of what I had to say. And it was a great conversation. But again, I think with coaching, if that's the first time a coach hears those conversations, is when you're having it at the end of the year in an evaluation, then you haven't done your job as an AD. So, I mean, you try to have those, you know, what's going on with the program throughout the year, and what do you see, coach? And, I mean, whether they're in length, but they may be, you know, 10 minutes, you know, after the game's over with, or in a quiet moment at practice, you know, how's it going, coach? And, you know, here's what I see. So if you – the only time a coach hears what the AD is saying is at the end of the year evaluation, and I certainly haven't done my job. And so it was very good. I thought it was very productive, and we walked out of there with a good feeling of where we needed to go and kind of what the expectations are moving forward.
Is it as cut and dried as, hey, we need to be in the NCAA tournament next year, or is there more room for latitude as far as that goes?
Well, there's more to it. I mean, and certainly, like I said, you know, what am I going to get into the specifics of what we laid out as expectations or what his expectations were, but I will tell you that what he hopes with this program and what I hope with this program going forward were exactly the same. So, but there's, you know, there's a lot of other things other than just that. But again, what he laid out and what I had in mind were both exactly what we were both on the same page on.
No, one thing going on right now, I had a chance to do the volleyball game over the weekend. They have an NCAA tournament shot. They play a game at Baylor coming up this week. What are you hearing right now? What do you view as the likelihood that the volleyball team makes the NCAA tournament this year?
Well, it's going to be tough. I mean, I think because of the, you know, they're not doing a full 64-team field. It's going to be 48. And obviously, you know, with the breakup of the season where we were, you know, active in the fall and finished third in the Big 12 with a, you know, pretty good overall record. You know, I hope the committee doesn't forget about that, and all they see is the few games that we've played, you know, this spring. I think going down to Baylor, you know, could help if we have a good showing or can get a win. Obviously, Baylor's a top 12 or top Big 12 program. You know, so I think it's going to be a challenge, and not just because, you know, they don't think we were successful enough. I think it's just going to be a limited field, and, you know, there's regional issues and all those, and then you've got your automatic bids already. So I think Susie is optimistic, and I think they're certainly deserving to be one of the 48 teams based on, you know, where the Big 12 is and as a conference. But with the split seasons between some Power 5 in the spring and some in the fall, I just don't know how the selection process is. It's not going to be a normal selection process.
Gene Taylor talking with us. On the baseball front, I know there's a lot of star power in the pitching that K-State brings to the table, and there are pretty high expectations for this year, certainly relative to where the program has been. It's a tough Big 12 opening series at Oklahoma State. There's no real way around that. Just what are you seeing right now from where the baseball program is at and where the season, really more accurately, is at for the baseball team right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the chance to talk to Pete, you know, after the I have not had a chance to talk to Pete after the Tech or the Oklahoma State series, and I'm going to be out of town this weekend, unfortunately. But you know, you're starting off with two of the best teams in the country, not only in the Big 12. You know, I think it's like what everybody else sees. You know, our pitching is strong. It's just we haven't been able to hit, and you know, we have had a challenge with our defense a little bit. You know, we've had some critical errors. So I don't know everything that's going into that. I know there's been a couple of injuries that have a tendency to, you know, mess with our lineup and kind of where that is. So you know, I still think they have a chance to, you know, get some wins because of the pitching, and if they can get the, you know, relax a little bit at the plate and start hitting the ball in critical times, I think they have a chance to still, you know, get some Big 12 wins. But as you know, this Big 12 in baseball is one of the, you know, better conferences in the country again. And I think there's still some pieces that, you know, he's still trying to mess with the lineup. So we'll see. I mean, we've got Texas Tech this weekend. I think they're one of the top 10 team in the country, and you know, but we do have them at home, so hopefully we can get a win out of the series, at least one.
Yeah, a couple injuries. You mentioned Cam Willman and Terrence Sperling on the infield and that going hurts to Oklahoma State, and then yeah, Texas Tech. And then after that, by the way, you're going to Austin. So three top 15 teams.
It doesn't start right out of the gate with the first three series easy, that's for sure.
Yeah, front-loaded schedule, no doubt. Gene, the last thing I have to throw at you here is something Mitch and I brainstormed last week. When we first found out about the contract extension, we were like, well, I guess the next Gene should be buying the next round of Bud Lights. But then we turned it into like maybe like a media kegger at the Taylor House or something to celebrate. We thought we'd pitch that to you.
Sure, let's you know, summer's here soon, and we'll have to figure something out. I you know, we can you got a pole in the backyard. So as long as you guys say nice things about me and write nice things, then we can put that together.
I think we can do that. We can make that happen. Gene, appreciate the time as always. Thanks for coming
on
again.
All right, thanks.
Congrats
again,
bud.
Thank you. Bye bye.
All right, there's K-State Athletic Director Gene Taylor. That was pretty easy. We didn't have to work very hard at all for that. All right. Mitch, remind me about that the next time we're critical. Just, you know, play the sound of, I don't know if there's a sound of like a keg or a beer can opening. That's what you should do here on the show.
That was a fun interview.
That was.
It really was. Because I think it laid out a lot of things. But the one thing that really stuck out for me was I loved what he said about he prefers to kind of be, and I'm paraphrasing here, on the back page. When I need to be in the front of the line, I will be. I think that's Gene Taylor. Yep. I really do.
Yep, and it's funny. We've been talking about that basically off the air right before that happened.
Uh-huh.
And then Gene Taylor came out and said it as well. All right, Baylor, Arkansas tonight. We'll talk some NCAA tournament coming up next on Wildcat Insider. Back on Wildcat Insider. Appreciate Gene Taylor coming on. If you missed any of that, check it out on the podcast page, newsradiokman.com, or Apple, Google, Spotify, all those places that you find podcasts. So I am bummed that Alabama got knocked out of the NCAA tournament last night. That was my favorite team to watch that was still left, outside of course, Baylor. And, I mean, Gonzaga is great, but I had taken like a personal affinity to Alabama. Not happy that UCLA wound up winning that game and just dominated the overtime.
Heck of a game, though, wasn't it?
It was. It was great. And we got one of those incredible March moments with the three ball that ties it to send it to overtime. That was great. It was awesome. It was what you were hoping to have with the Oral Roberts shot just the day before.
Truly.
And you were like, man, that felt like it had the makings of one of the ultimate March moments. So I'll take it. But I will say, pour one out for my Crimson Tide.
Did you think Ace Miss's shot was going?
Love me some Nate Oates. You're talking about the Oral Roberts shot? Yeah. I did, yes. When I saw it, I thought it looked online. I was like, man, this is actually happening. Like this is And I was in an environment where it was like a large group of people. So it's like everybody's watching it, like hanging on it. And it was like, man, this is going to be great. It just feels like the moment's going to happen because everybody around you is like just waiting for it. So
they were really good. It's hard for me to fathom that they were the fourth seed in the Summit League tournament.
Yeah.
But I think
and
that's
lost
what,
to UMKC, well, to Kansas City. I keep doing that. To Kansas City.
And I know we're talking about a lot of different things here and matchups and what have you. And you talked about Alabama. It's amazing to me, like with UCLA, when you fill out your bracket, you know, you try to look for trends. UCLA's trend was they'd lost four in a row. Four in a row. And here they are in the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
You banked on that one, right, Jade?
I'll be honest. Like I had very little respect for UCLA going into the tournament.
Most didn't.
Very little respect.
Yeah.
And they've earned it, man. Like my dude Jaquez, I will say I like watching that guy play, and he absolutely went off in overtime. How good do you feel about Baylor's chances tonight against Arkansas?
You know what? After their last game, you know, where they did not shoot the ball from three like they normally do, and to still find a way with especially what I will describe as a smothering second-half defense, I think you still have to feel pretty good. They're not going to have that many nights off shooting the ball, but that's, I think, why they are where they're at. In that they're really high level and probably elite at both ends of the floor most nights. And usually the defense doesn't slump, right? that's the good part. You'll have a night where you'll see somebody shoot a decent percentage against them, but most of the time you have to earn it. And I have said this for a long time, and I know he's getting the recognition that he deserves now, but Davion Mitchell has been the best on-ball defender in this league for 2 years for sure. Period, end of story, in my opinion. He is dynamite. So I do think they will win tonight. I do respect Arkansas. I think this is a very interesting team. I think it is a team that is pretty well balanced. I was looking at some of their stuff. I mean, they were 13-4 in the league and 12-2 in the non-con. So they've really competed in a league that most people just wanted to talk about Alabama and not Arkansas. This is a pretty good club. I do think they're a tick or two behind Alabama, though, don't you? Just a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely my perception coming in. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really was. I don't worry too much about Baylor. And tonight, that is, I don't. And I'm just so clamoring for Scott Drew to get to a national championship game, get to the Final Four, get to a national title game. Like, I want it so bad because I've been an early adopter on the, which it seems crazy to say that, like, me just being a Scott Drew fan like 5 years ago makes me an early adopter on, hey, Scott Drew can actually coach. But I feel like I've been an early adopter on the Scott Drew bandwagon. So I can't wait to just toot that horn as much as I can if he does wind up making it all the way there.
You know, it's really, I'll just say this. The job that he has done, really from the beginning, is extraordinary, to be honest about it. But in the last 3 to 4 to 5 years, they've taken an even bigger step on the national scene, haven't they? And I think that step is still being taken, which is a little bit scary, in the fact that they're now recruiting the highest level athletes in the history of their program. What they've done the last couple of years is remarkable. They're building a new facility. I mean, Baylor basketball probably never is going to be any hotter than it is right now. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but it is sizzling right now.
Fair? Yeah, I mean, it's tough to get much higher than what they've been on this 2-year run.
Yeah.
And that's a part of it, too, that I just feel like there's a justness about it, too, if Baylor does wind up making a Final Four this year, because they lost last year, you know, when they were playing as well as they were.
They were 26-4, I think, last year, weren't they?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, they had this unbelievable season last year, and it winds up getting wiped out because of COVID. I mean, they're one of those teams. Like, hey, yeah, you can tell me, all right, like Kansas was going to be the number one overall seed. Okay, yeah, boo-hoo. Like, Bill Self can go pour one out in his giant trophy case that he has up in his office. And not that Scott Drew's is empty, but, like, you know, he doesn't get to experience that all that often. So that's the thing. I feel like there is a vindication for Baylor in all of this. So I will be pulling very hard for that. Now, one thing, we talked all about the Big 12 coaching scenarios that are out there right now at Texas and Texas Tech and Oklahoma State. We've missed one, and the one that has a K-State connection to it. So we'll get Wyatt's reaction to the Lon Kruger news coming up next. The Lon Kruger retires at Oklahoma. That is one issue here that are part of the Big 12 coaching carousel that is overshadowed right now. The news today was Mike Boynton signs a 7-year extension with Oklahoma State for $3 million a year. And then obviously the Beard, Chris Beard at Texas Tech, will he take the Texas job or not? Texas really pursuing him. Shaka Smart was introduced today at Marquette. That storyline is completely fascinating. That's really left Lon Kruger's story. You know, if I were advising Lon, I would say, hey, man, if you not the best timing in the world. If you wanted this to be everybody soaks this up and talks about Lon Kruger for a couple of weeks, I say that in jest. I don't think he cares at all. But it has been overshadowed by everything else going on. But that's significant news. I mean, he's a guy that's done a really good job at Oklahoma for a long time. K-State ties aside, obviously there's a lot of that. But if we're talking about what that means for the Big 12 landscape, that's a pretty big hole that Oklahoma will now have to fill.
It's a really big hole from my perspective. Away from what Lon accomplished here at Kansas State as a player and then as a coach, just his tenure at Oklahoma, I think, shows you what he's all about. Good staff, doing it the right way. I remember one of their people that covered their program the first couple of years Lon was there. He said, I'm around a lot. I've never seen anybody coach like Lon, so calm, so professional, so whatever. You don't hear a curse word out of him. Just dripping with class. You know what I mean? And a guy that had to have been fun to play for. You know, I think he has been great for college basketball. I think he'll be missed. With that said, I think there were a couple of things on the table here that maybe the timing was okay for Coach Kruger. And I think one of them, of course, was Kevin getting the job at UNLV as a, 35 or 36-year-old young man. And then I'm not going to lie about this. I think the loss of Lou Hill's death really, really got to Lon a little bit, or a lot. Lou was a really good man, and that had to really hurt. Lou was with him a long time, and then, of course, went to Rio Grande Valley, and we all know the story. He passed away in his sleep and so on and so forth. Those kind of things have a way of taking a toll. And I remember I said to you off air a moment ago, I think I really, a year ago, Lon indicated, I'm not necessarily long for this, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, but I kind of got the sense that he still had another year or two or three in him, and then this came along. So I can't say that I was stunned, but I was surprised. And yet, on another hand, not so much based on, you know, just the lay of the current landscape, because it's changed for him. And the league will miss him.
Yeah, oh, no doubt. Like, you're not going to find anybody really saying anything bad about Lon Kruger, like, across the league. And did it in a way where, obviously, he still was successful at what he was doing. That's what I appreciate about him. Like, and I know, you know, we can have a whole long conversation about this and the merits of shutting off your practices and keeping the media out and controlling the narrative. He had every practice was always open to the media. Like, he was just open. He would do interviews all the time. Heck, he came on, and I appreciated this a lot from him. He came on this summer when the Last Dance documentary was being aired, and we brought him on talking about having Michael Jordan here in Manhattan for a little while when nothing's going on in the pandemic, and he does a radio interview with us because that was just really what he did. Like, he was very accommodating, just really accommodating, and still was able to win at a high level while doing that. So I, as a media member, very much appreciate Lon for nothing else other than that, proving that you can win while not being crazy, keeping everybody out all the time.
Kenny Mossman, who has K-State ties, is at Oklahoma. Toby Rowland, who's my friend, who's the voice of the Sooners. Those types of people will tell you that he just was one of those guys that was great to work with. Anything you asked. And in the days that followed, the first few days that followed the announcement, you know, people were writing stories about him and the things just going out of his way. And I have firsthand information, you know, through our coach, Bruce Weber, about the hours and hours that Lon spends with coaches versus cancer and those types of things. So he, first class dude. End of story.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. First class dude. Shout out to Lon Kruger. Respect there for the career. That's going to do it for us here on Wildcat Insider. For Mitch Fortner and Wyatt Thompson, I'm John Kurtz. Again, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. You can find the show many ways if you missed any of it, including Gene Taylor on the show earlier today. And appreciate him stopping by as well.